Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty along with my brother Darren live in the Morton studio today. Well, today on the show we're going to talk a little about root rot in pulse crops. You know, this is one of the things that people have been having a lot more issue with here in the last few years. And we've seen pulse crop acres grow in certain areas of the country, so this is getting to be more of a concern in those areas. We'll also talk today just a little bit about this week, and actually early next week as well. We're doing a series of field days with Randy Doughty. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know today Darren's going to be down in West Point, Nebraska, and also in Centerville, South Dakota with Randy. I am going to be in Sheldon, Iowa. And then tomorrow I'm going to be in Baltic and, let's see, Kimball, South Dakota. Darren's going to be in Freeman, South Dakota. So if you want a complete list of that, you can go to agphd.com. But we just decided, you know, it'd be really fun if we can work with Randy. He's a good friend of ours. We really like him, and he's got a lot of great stuff. And obviously, I mean, he's the world record holder for soybean production, former world record holder for corn production. So just a tremendous farmer. But anyway, we just thought, what a great opportunity to talk to him here at the end of the season, see what things look like out in the field, and give us some tips thinking about next year. Because I realize, like where we're at, we haven't even started harvest. I mean, other than wheat, we did a couple of months ago. But we haven't started harvest yet for corn or soybeans. I would expect soybean harvest is going to start in about another 3 weeks. Corn harvest is going to start, early to mid-October. And then we'll see how this year turns out. But I'm already focused on next year. I mean, there's not a whole lot left this year that we can do to increase crop yield. I mean, certainly we can prevent harvest loss and those kind of things. But we got to start looking at next year. What can I do to make next year great? And it starts basically the day that you're out there with that combine. Okay, now we're ready to go for next year. So we want to be pulling soil tests. We want to be taking a look at that fertility side. We got to be thinking about weed control, insects, diseases, all that kind of stuff. All right, so Darren, what's top of mind for you today?
Well, just along that harvest theme, looking at timely harvest is just so critical. You know, getting the maintenance things all set now that there's just no possible way that you're going to have breakdowns in the fall. And that means having the right spare parts on hand, all these kinds of things, because you just can't afford that downtime. Because I look at corn harvest, and we see so many guys waiting too long to get started or not having sufficient equipment, whether that be bin space, trucks, or possibly even enough combines, that kind of thing, to get harvest happening at the right time. We look at a lot of guys that wait until we have moisture down into the 15, 16, 17% range. You've lost a lot of money by doing that. You really need to be out there sooner, like 24%, maybe even a little bit wetter, depending on what you have for equipment and space, to be able to get stuff done where you can maximize yield and minimize loss. You mentioned the harvest loss thing. It's huge. Wow. There's a seed breeder that I was talking to just the other day. And there was a plot that they had that we were talking about, hey, what about your plot in this area? And they said, nope, we had to junk it. And the reason why they didn't get harvest done in the fall timely, and they had a lot of shatter loss at the head, and there's so much volunteer corn that even after spraying it a couple of times, there was still tons of pressure, and they thought the data was horrible. So it's one of those things that you're losing lots and lots of money out there if you don't get that harvest done timely. And on soybeans, wow, getting that moisture percent right. A lot of guys have a tough time with green soybean plants. And, wow, it kind of smells like silage when I'm out there. Guess what? That's a good thing. We've got green plants and dry beans. Awesome. We've maximized the potential of those plants. We're going to do great. But we got to get out there when our beans are a little bit on the wet side so we don't lose things. We're going to lose more letting them dry down to 11%. Then we are taking a dock at the elevator, hauling them in at 14.
All right, so let me throw something out that you might think is crazy if you're a farmer and you're listening. I'd really like you to harvest your soybeans in the range of 14 to 17% moisture. And you're going to go, what? I can't store those in the bin. I know you can't. But what we put on our own farm and what we're really advising, especially seed growers to do, but any farmer, this makes a tremendous amount of sense, is get these bin fan controls. We do a lot of stuff with AgriDry. The bin fan controls are awesome. I can get a little alert on my phone, see when things turn on and turn off. But, I mean, we've known this for decades that, you know, if you pump air at the right temperature and the right humidity through grain, you can either take moisture out or you can put moisture back in. Well, you know what? It's a lot easier to take moisture out and not damage the beans than it is to start with damaged beans that you've already cracked up and damaged internally at 8 to 10% moisture and try to put moisture back in. You can do that, but you're never going to change the fact that those beans are already damaged. So I'd rather see you have the best quality beans, pull them out of the field at 14 to 17%, throw them in a bin with bin fan controls, and let those dry down here over a little bit of time. With corn, we've had better yield gains and a lot less harvest loss when we've been harvesting around 20% moisture. That's my new target. You know, we used to shoot for, hey, it's expensive to dry corn, so let's get her down to 17%, maybe 18%. I am not a believer in that anymore. It doesn't cost much. We've got a nice system on our farm. Propane's inexpensive. So, I mean, if we can dry ourselves, then it makes a lot of sense to pull that grain out at 20%. We don't have a whole lot of volunteer corn since we started doing that, so we've really reduced our harvest loss and our yields have gone up.
Well, it makes a big difference. And you think about it, you've already made the yield. Why not try to harvest at maximum percentages? Okay. Let's say that you don't believe anything that we're saying and you say, oh, those guys are crazy today. Then what you need to look at is just doing some things different on your farm this fall. Take part of a field out when it's 24% moisture corn. Then wait and take the rest out at 17 like you normally would. And then run the math on it and see for yourself. Same thing on the soybeans. You know, if you take them out at 14% this year because your elevator will take it, but they're going to give you a dock. Look at how that dollars out compared to harvesting at 11% and how much you've lost out of the field and yield.
All right. Well, once again, we are going to talk today about root rot in pulse crops. We are broadcasting today from the Morton studio. You can email us radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You depend on your soybeans to make a living. So you need a product you can depend on to keep your crop thriving. Ondiamo 230 by Sipcam Rotam is the ideal fungicide to manage frog eye leaf spot and white mold in soybeans. With the active ingredient tetraconazole, Ondiamo 230 mixes easily in a low volume of water and is compatible with other fungicides. Ondiamo, a flexible, cost-effective addition to your fungicide program. Learn more at sipcamrotam.com. Innovation and value for the new normal.
How do corn growers get in the zone? With Corvus, the number one pre-emergence corn herbicide. Corvus is the only corn herbicide that delivers three levels of defense against broadleaf weeds and grasses, including resistant weeds. Burndown takes out early weeds, residual prevents new weeds, and reactivation with rain gets late weeds. Want to keep it weed-free all season? Welcome to the Corvus Zone. Corvus, the number one pre-emergence corn herbicide. From Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
And now we have Jenny in the field talking with Farmer Dave.
Dave, this corn has some noticeable differences. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, I know AgriLiquid had helped me out a lot last year, but I've been using my old fertilizer program for a long time. So I decided to do a comparison, AgriLiquid versus a conventional program. So far, the differences are pretty obvious.
Looks clear to me.
Absolutely. AgriLiquid is going to take the championship here.
I want to talk to you about diesel. Not the engine, the man, Rudolf Diesel. 120 years ago, he designed an engine that revolutionized the industrial world. The great thing about change is it moves us forward. Chevron Delo products and the people behind them have always been at the forefront of change, like creating the next generation of heavy-duty diesel engine oil technology with increased engine wear protection. Delo helps your engine last longer. Yeah, change is good, and Delo 400 is a game changer. Delo, let's go further.
Welcome back. This is Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. If you'd like to email into the show, it's radio@agphd.com or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhDMedia, Darren Hefty or Brian Hefty. Our topic today is root rot in pulse crops. Not a real fun topic, but we got to talk about this a little bit because it is plaguing farmers across the country and up in Canada. And so one of those Canadian listeners is Jason. He is from Alberta. Jason, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, Brian.
All right. So talk to us just a little bit about this root rot issue in pulse crops on your farm. First of all, to begin with, which pulse crops are you raising?
We're growing yellow peas.
Oh, okay. And is root rot, is that one of the biggest diseases? Is that the biggest disease that you fight in your peas?
Yeah, I think so. Like we've got a pretty good program for in-crop disease control. You know, most of the peas that are grown in the area are definitely sprayed with an in-crop fungicide.
Okay.
But, you know, I think one of the challenges is root rot for sure. You know, there is that extra step of treating the seed and sometimes there's some compatibility issues with inoculants and some of the biological products with some of the seed treatment options. And so I know there's, you know, some guys that, you know, just say, well, you know, it's only peas or whatever, and we can skip the seed treatment. But I think that's definitely hurts guys. You know, if they get seeding on the later side,
yeah,
it's warm soil and that kind of thing. But I think, you know, we've seen the best success when we started with a good seed treatment right from the start. And we weren't seeding very early this year. We seeded our peas, you know, at the end of May and into that first week of June. And so, you know, soil conditions were really good, but seed treatment at that point was still part of the program. We've got some areas last year, especially when we were really wet, that saw a huge impact from Aphenomyces, and that's kind of a new one. And there's not a lot of options for seed treatment on that. But, you know, I think with most of the other new products or other seed treatment products, Fusarium, Pythium, Rhizoctonia are getting controlled pretty good.
Yeah, you know, as our crops primarily that we raise in our farm are corn and soybeans, and a lot of guys in the United States here are raising corn and soybeans, and I'm sure when they hear this topic, they go, root rot, I mean, why don't you guys just put seed treatment on and solve most of that problem? So if you put the right seed treatment on, is that going to do it for you?
Yeah, for the most part, the right seed treatment will control the diseases. The Aphenomyces, I guess the newer one that has definitely popped up, like I said, last year in a big way, is there's only one product that has some suppression on that, and so in a wet year it's huge. It really hurts, and then I think what guys are looking at is they can actually do some soil tests or to see if they have that disease present on the farm, rather than, you know, just a blanket application on everything. Yeah.
The challenge with that, though, I'm sure, is which spot in the field are you going to pick to do the soil test, because it might not show up in one area and it might show up in another area. Wouldn't that kind of be the challenge with that soil test thing?
Yeah, and I think, you know, looking at what the information from the labs, the disease testing labs, is they have a protocol similar to the entrance ways of the field. They're, you know, that's where they see the highest disease load for that disease, and so they'll go. They recommendation is to, you know, test in those areas. So they have a pretty good protocol actually on where to take the samples from.
Okay. Now you mentioned there was one fungicide that has pretty decent activity on the Aphenomyces. Which one is that?
That's the Intego Solo. So that the active in that stuff is ethoboxam.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we're quite familiar with that. We talk about it a lot here in the United States on the Pythium side, that it's really good on the Pythium side, but I guess I didn't realize it was good on that one for you. The other question that I would have for you is, you mentioned in wetter years it's worse. And, you know, where we farm, we have tile in all of our fields now. And can I assume you probably don't even have any tile in your ground? I know up in Canada, it's not nearly as common to find tile in the ground. I'm just going to say, isn't it worse when you don't have tile and then you also have the wet year so you can't get rid of that moisture?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's a huge challenge where we are, talking about tile drainage and that. It's guys aren't, they're not even close to getting to that point here. And I think it would be a huge benefit, but it's just something that we're so far behind in getting that going up here.
Yeah, and then all the non-farmers get really emotional about that, like, oh my gosh, we're going to get flooded out, and it's bad for the soil and the environment and everything, and that kind of stuff just drives me crazy. Okay, we better move off that topic because I'll talk the rest of the day on that. All right, so how early are some of these symptoms showing up? Like, let's say you do have the wet year and you have more root rot than normal. How early are you seeing, it looks like I've got a problem?
Yeah, so after the peas are coming out of the ground, and usually what will happen is there'll be that the fields that I've seen were some fields that just had a yellow spot in the field, and then that spot just started to get bigger, and or along the field edge, it just never starts to green up, and that patch just stays yellow and stunted for the whole year. So basically, pretty early in the season, you'll see that those areas, they look like they're suffering, they're underwater, they're kind of in the low areas, and I think guys have to go out and do some pretty intensive scouting. It's just driving by it all summer and saying, well, I guess that's a low spot or that's a wet spot, or
right.
It just kind of write it off that it. But I think if they can identify it, manage it, and say, look, we've got some issues out there that need to be addressed, and pay the extra money for the seed treatment anytime they put peas. Good rotation too. That's, unfortunately with the economics, we're seeing some back-to-back peas being grown up here in this area.
Yep.
And that's not good for anything, especially diseases. It's just compounding the effect too. So I know that's happening quite a bit, but hopefully if things kind of turn around here in some of the markets, guys aren't pressured to do that.
How about a difference in varieties? When you talk about yellow peas, do you find any difference in varieties?
There's not a whole lot. Like, I know most of the peas that we're seeing up here are Meadows is the most common variety, and that is probably one of the most susceptible varieties. There are, I think there's some new ones being introduced, but we're not quite there yet. The area that we are here in northern Alberta, we're not in that soybean growing area just yet. But I see that's definitely an option for some of the guys in southern Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, where peas and root diseases are like aphenomyces are too much, and they can switch into something like soybeans and be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Crop rotation does solve a lot of things. And so basically your summary is hope for a normal moisture season, use seed treatment, and then for the most part, and especially when you get Intego Solo, and then for the most part, things are turning out okay.
Yeah, you bet.
Yep. All right. Well, hey, Jason, thanks a lot for the time today. This was great stuff. Really appreciate it. And best of luck to you the rest of the summer and fall here.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Yep, thanks. Yeah, this is just one of those things that farmers are constantly struggling to get diseases under control. And I think he made a good comment right away that a lot of farmers have realized, hey, in-crop fungicide, super important. But, we end up with the same issue in soybeans that he said in peas, that if the soil is a little warmer, plantings getting a little later, people start thinking, oh, I don't need a seed treatment. Well, there are a lot of reasons why you do. We'll talk more about root rot in pulse crops coming up right after this.
Farmers, this is your combine speaking. I lose an average of 5 bushels per acre from rotor loss. Estes patented RPR concave stops rotor loss with less grain damage. Plus, it works on all crops, no changing concaves. High yield means more money from your field. Call 765-205-2605 or visit StopRotorLoss.com and maximize your harvest. Call now, 765-205-2605.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
The Guardian Air Twin Spray Nozzle from HyPro produces a twin spray pattern with air-inducted droplets for superior coverage, even in dense canopies. Be effective and efficient with your spray application this season with the Guardian Air Twin. HyPro, helping you spray better.
And now we have Jenny in the field talking with Farmer Dave.
Dave, your orchard looks amazing. How is your season shaping up?
Well, I'm using the starting lineup that my agri-liquid coach suggested through my irrigation system. The trees have gained measurable girth. Everything's looking really good. I'm on track to get my fruit to the market a full week ahead of my neighbors.
So you're feeling good about finishing up this season?
Absolutely. Agri-liquid is my championship team.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
On Ag PhD, we've been talking about agronomy for nearly 20 years now. The number one question besides agronomy we get each week is for help on grain marketing. That's why we've created Grain PhD. No, we're not able to tell you exactly when to hit the high in the market, but we will give you the education you need to feel just as knowledgeable about your grain decisions as you do your agronomy ones. Grain PhD is the best place to go for all your risk management and cash marketing needs. Just go to grainphd.com or call 844-GRAIN-01.
Extend weed control with new Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology. The best dicamba option to help manage tough-to-control weeds with a significant reduction in volatility potential compared to currently available dicamba formulations. Designed for your Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans, Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology can help you extend weed control. Learn how to get the most out of your system at RoundupReadyExtend.com. Individual results may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Thanks for tuning in today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here in the Morton studio. We're talking today about root rot in pulse crops. If you'd like to email the show, it's radio@agphd.com, or you can send me a note on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, or Brian Hefty. All right, next up, we've got Jake up in Saskatchewan. Hey, Jake, how are you today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing great, except for we're getting calls on root rot here in the last few years in pulse crops. So what kind of experience have you had on your own farm? First of all, which pulse crops do you raise?
We're growing lentils and peas. We do put in some soybeans, but we don't ever see root rot in soybeans. This year, it's not a factor at all because it's so dry.
Yep.
But last year, we had a lot of trouble with root rot.
All right, so talk to us then about last year. And, I mean, was there anything you learned then? It was a bad year for root rot. Where did you have the fewest amount of problems?
It's kind of hard to pin down. It was a really wet year. Certainly any sort of low-lying area with poor drainage was considerably worse,
yep,
where the water just had more time to sit there.
Yep.
So maybe doing some more drainage work would help with that. There's not a lot we can do as far as products go. We use seed treatments already, but they don't control the really bad root rot, the aphanomyces. So that's not really a great option for us at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, so we were just talking to Jason from Alberta, and he said he's had good luck on the aphanomyces with Intigo Solo, the ethoboxam. Have you tried any of that?
We haven't. The messaging that I've gotten, I guess, from our retail and and other people that we talk to is that it's a suppression product only, and there hasn't been a lot of interest in trying to put it out there just yet, but it's probably something that we should be given a try to see how it works.
Yeah, and that gets to be the real challenge. I mean, there are a lot of different pesticides out there, and in some cases, there isn't anything that fits exactly for whatever you're after, whether it's disease control or insects or weeds. But you just have to give it a try, and hopefully between that and, you know, maybe a little improved drainage and some of these other things, it does make a difference. So what else have you seen in terms of having better luck here? Switching varieties, any other cultural practices, how long you have to rotate? What else have you done that has helped at least a little bit for you?
We haven't seen any differences in varieties. Obviously, just not growing peas and lentils does help quite a bit.
Sure.
Soybeans aren't susceptible to it.
Yep.
But the rotation is, you need a pretty long rotation to actually reduce the aphanomyces load in the soil, like 10 years or something like that. So that's not a great option. We don't grow peas and lentils in a super intensive fashion in terms of, you know, we do have quite a few 8 years in between, but last year almost didn't seem to matter.
So when we talk about last year, let's go back to last year. How bad was the yield loss? What percent of your yield were these root rots taking?
It depended on the area and the field.
Yep.
So in some fields we lost, you know, in some parts of the field we lost every plant almost. While in other parts of that same field, everything was still there and there was not a whole lot of problem. It's hard to pin down how much of that was caused by root rot and aphanomyces and how much it was caused by just water sitting on the surface long enough to kill the plants. Because
sure.
There was a period of a couple of days in some places where the water was sitting there, and it doesn't matter what root rot you got, the lentils just don't survive something like that. So.
Yeah, right.
But certainly in some cases, the yield loss was pretty severe.
Yeah. And in your area, there's almost no tiling that's going on. Because, I mean, we keep talking about and coming back to this drainage issue, and we did with Jason up in Alberta as well. And I just keep thinking about tiling and lowering the water table and what a difference that's made even on our own farm in terms of seed diseases and seedling diseases. So, I mean, is there any tiling around you? Is there any talk about, hey, maybe we should get some tile in the ground? Or are you just having too many barriers to get that done?
There's no tiling around here at this time.
Yep.
I don't know anybody who's doing any anywhere close to here. It's funny that you mention it, though, because we have actually been looking pretty hard into buying some tiling equipment and just trying it out.
Yep.
The issue that we have around here is we're pretty flat, and there's no, we'd have to basically do up a large-scale drainage project to move water off the field entirely. We've talked about kind of targeted drainage to move a number of sloughs into one larger one, but that's about as far as we can go without getting permits and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, my dad is originally from north central Iowa, and it's really flat there, very heavy ground. And he just talks about, you know, they were lucky because they did stuff almost 100 years ago and all the farmers got together when we didn't have all these other things and the non-farmers being concerned about it. Because let's face it, back then, most people were on the farm and they understood, hey, we need to get this thing worked out. Whereas today, everybody, it seems like, wants to criticize farmers rather than do what they can to help farmers produce more food. So I get frustrated by that. All right, so anything else that you're kind of thinking about as you go forward here, other than, hey, hopefully we get a better seed treatment and we're kind of hoping for not a dry year, but at least a normal year in moisture. Anything else you're planning to do on your farm to reduce this root rot issue?
The only thing, I mean, I guess a lot of it just comes down to good agronomy too, right? I mean, good seed planted at the right depth at the right time with a seed treatment, get it out of the ground quick and healthy, and hope that we just don't get those big pounding rains that cause that kind of damage. And probably the right thing to do to help mitigate that is to put in some tile.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, we've got some flat ground too that we have to actually pump the water out. And you see a lot of that as you get up into the Red River Valley in North Dakota and Minnesota, very flat ground. don't have anywhere for it to go in a short distance. I mean, yeah, eventually, like you said, if you work together with a whole bunch of people, you can get it to a river or something like that or somewhere it needs to go. But if you're just doing a small project, it can get to be a little bit challenging. All right, so just to kind of switch gears real quick, since I've got you on the line here, how is everything looking this year in terms of your crop? You said it's a dry year. How dry? I mean, is it to the point where that's dramatically going to limit your overall production?
Well, we're under 40% of our average annual precipitation at this point.
Yep.
It's certainly dry, but we came into this year with a full soil profile.
Yep.
And it's pretty amazing what we've been able to grow on that. The hot weather didn't help anything. That definitely took some yield off of the pulse crops. But the cereals and even the canola have been pretty good, which has been a surprise.
Good. So is there anything harvested up there now?
Yeah, we're about 60-65% of the way through the harvest now.
Oh, good.
So things are progressing pretty well. I mean, it's been dry, so there hasn't been a lot for delays.
Okay, so when you... go ahead.
Our concern at this point, I guess, is for next year.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I will say, though, what I'm always joking around with my brother, and I tell him, look, I want a drought for all the time when I'm trying to harvest, and then it can start raining again. So let's hope that actually happens. But yeah, we got a whole bunch of rain here in August, and we were super dry in June and July, almost no moisture. But we were in kind of the same spot as you were, where our soil profile was full at the beginning of the year. So we had hot temps, no rain in June and July, and people are starting to panic and going, oh no, it's going to be terrible. And now stuff looks really, really good. It came through okay. My dad always used to talk about, too, you know, if you start with moisture in that soil, you're at least halfway there. So, I know you've got heavier soil, and, boy, that makes a difference in those heavy soils if we can begin the year with some moisture. Hey, Jake, it's been great talking to you today. I just want to thank you a lot for calling in, and I sure hope the rest of harvest turns out great for you.
All right, thanks.
You bet.
Good luck to you too.
Yep, thanks. Yeah, we keep coming back to that whole tile issue, and we got another caller on the line here. I've talked Cliff from up in North Dakota. We've talked a lot about tile with Cliff over the years, and I'm sure that's going to continue right after this. We'll also talk a little bit more about these root rot issues and pulse crops. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice spring day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory get past your defenses and show up in your fields. It's more than a nuisance, and it will cause yield loss if you don't take care of it soon. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and resistant weeds like Velvet Leaf and Morning Glory? With the fast-acting post-emergence broadleaf control of Resource Herbicide. Resource is the ideal partner for glyphosate because it adds speed to your post-herbicide application. Resource quickly takes down problem weeds that glyphosate misses, so you can start fighting back immediately. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergence control solutions, including Resource, Cobra Herbicide, and Select Max Herbicide with Inside Technology. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field and visit valent.com/cover the gap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
The reason center pivots look a lot alike is because of an engineer named Richard Renke. He's the pioneer from Deschler, Nebraska, whose innovations changed an entire industry. Today, his legacy lives on as we produce the next generation of irrigation products that move farming forward, even if our main product still goes in circles. To learn more, visit Renke.com today. That's R-E-I-N-K-E. Renke. More right than rain.
As any grower can tell you, 2 weeks can be a very long time. This is why today's growers are looking towards Zidua herbicide to gain an extra 2 weeks to reach canopy and keep weeds from escaping. Part of BASF Advanced Weed Control, Zidua herbicide offers the longest-lasting residual control of small-seeded broadleaf weeds and grasses, up to 2 weeks longer than other pre-emergence herbicides. To learn more about Zidua herbicide, visit advancedweedcontrol.basf.us or ask your BASF authorized retailer. Consult with your state regulatory agency regarding status of registration in your state. Always read and follow label directions.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating, to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERF maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
New Preemptor SC fungicide preempts disease for more vigorous, healthier plants. Preemptor SC fungicide is absorbed into plant tissue for deep down protection against a broad spectrum of diseases. And Preemptor SC fungicide preempts timing stress with a wide application window. For corn, apply from V5 to R4. For soybeans, put it down from R1 to R5. Preemptor SC fungicide. Always read and follow label directions. See your FMC Star retailer or visit fmccrop.com.
Welcome back. This is Ag PhD Radio. I'm Brian Hefty in the Morton studio. Next on the show, we've got Cliff calling in from North Dakota. Hey, Cliff, how you doing today?
Doing just fine. We're done with small grains harvest. We got a little bit of time between going into the soybean harvest.
And how did the small grain harvest turn out for you?
Actually, it was a pleasant surprise. We're right in a banana belt. We got a few rains at very, very important times, and we had a good yield with good quality and a good price.
Nice. Yeah, I know there were a lot of farmers up in North Dakota, especially as you get to the central and western part of the state, that really were suffering from drought. So you said you got some timely rains, basically. Is that what saved you?
That's exactly right, plus the fact that our CEC is high because of the high clay content, and between the two of them, we took a good crop off with a good price.
Yep, good. Okay, so today we're talking about root rot in pulse crops. Which pulse crops are you raising on your farm?
We raise field peas. We started with field peas in 1990. And we had a three-year rotation for a couple of years. Then we went to a four-year rotation, and that four-year rotation was probably the best rotation we ever had.
So with the four-year rotation, is that then lessening the root rot problems you've had?
No, as a matter of fact, as we kept growing field peas on a four-year rotation, that is how we developed the root rot disease and Amphimites is what we received. We see it develop in the low areas first, and then as we planted it again, it would go up the side slopes, and towards the end, we had fields that we harvested with a disc, which is not very profitable.
No. Okay, so what have you found now that's working to lessen the problem?
We quit growing field peas. That was the only solution. NDSU said, take an eight-year break and do not raise field peas. And we're in the fourth year of not raising them.
Yeah, that's pretty frustrating. So one of the things we were talking to Jason up in Alberta about is he had tried some Intego Solo, and he was getting some control on aphanomyces. And, you know, there are a lot of new seed treatment products. We've been using biological products as well to help us in other crops. So we don't raise any pulse crops on our farm, but we do certainly raise corn, soybeans, and wheat. And we're seeing a lot of difference there. The other thing I know you've been pretty vocal about is the need for drain tile in your area, and that's something else we've seen that can really help dramatically with these diseases. So have you been able to get much tile in the ground now here over the last couple of years?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the last field that we had into field peas was on the first field we had tiled.
Mm-hmm.
And where we had no tiling on that field, That's where we harvested with a disc. And where we had tiling down in the heavy clays, it still was no production. But as soon as we got into the Barnes loam, 20, 30, 40, 50 bushels for the acre, and the tiling definitely helped.
Yeah. And I guess the hope that I have is if you can keep that soil with some oxygen in it over time, then you're just going to have an overall healthier soil. And so maybe when you do come back to field peas eventually, that's going to make a big difference for you. And then hopefully we've got a good seed treatment package and combination there for the field peas at that point too. So between those two things, I'm going to hope that that'll make a difference. So talk to us just a little bit more about the tile and what you've seen now with some of the other crops that you're raising.
Well, the tile where we have put it in our heavier soils is where we went to first because we were just getting lots of moisture up here and we were losing our best ground when we put the tile in. We started out at 40-foot spacing on the laterals.
Yep.
And as we are seeing an increase in the salt problems up here, as an experiment, we went to 30-foot spacing and 20-foot spacing.
Mm-hmm.
And where we did the 20-foot spacing, in 2 years, I can see an improvement. The salt problem has decreased. And the production is starting to come back.
Good. Yeah, that's good to hear. It takes a little bit of time for that salt thing to go away, especially when you have heavy soil and you don't get an overabundance of rainfall because salts are leachable, but they've got to be able to percolate through that or move through that soil, and they also have to have rain to move them through that soil. So in a drier year, it's really tough with that whole salt thing. Okay, so what are you doing with the water? Do you have places you can go with the water, or do you have to put it in a wetland of your own, or where is it going?
The water that we are taking out of the tiles, we are in water resource assessment districts,
mm-hmm.
and so we have a natural outlet and we do the tile applications for each one of the projects, and it is working very well. And the other thing that we're seeing up here because of the dryness is the increased salinity parallel to the roads, whether they're federal, township, or county, 60 to 80 feet out in that field, the salt and kochia run parallel mile after mile on each of the roads.
Yeah, kochia seems to grow in almost anything. I don't understand why these seed breeders, you know, they talk about all these great things they do with biotechnology and everything else. I don't understand why they don't isolate whatever it is in kochia that can grow well in salt and dry conditions and take that and put it into some of the other crops. Because I think you'd really have a home run there, don't you?
I agree. And some of the alfalfa, you know, that they're keying it to pH soil, that is helping, and there's another one called AC Saltlander. The only thing is you got to find a home for whoever would buy it from you, but your idea is absolutely correct. We need to take that gene and make good use of it.
All right, so what else is happening on your farm right now, Cliff?
Well, the other thing we're looking at is we got a break between the small grains and the soybeans, so I'm going to push to get some soil testing done on 5-acre increments and hopefully get more production out of my land next year.
Awesome. So have you done any 5-acre grids before?
No, I have not. This will be the first time.
Yep. Yeah, it was a lot of fun for me the first time that we did some of that because we had in the past done more composite testing. And there were a lot of fields where we thought, oh, pH is pretty good. And then we started isolating it, and we realized we have high pH in this field, and we have low pH. In fact, I was just talking to a farmer from North Dakota the other day, and he goes, believe it or not, Brian, I actually have a bunch of spots on my farm that I have to lime. I have low pH spots. Now, granted, I have a whole bunch of high pH spots, so if you average it out, yes, I've got high pH. but I actually had some low pH spots, so low that it was hurting my production on that end of things. So you got pH, you got to look at the different nutrients, everything else, and, you know, as expensive as fertilizer has gotten and as important as fertility is to overall production, I just think either grids or zones, something like that, but you know, doing more than composite tests is really going to help. All right, well, Cliff, I guess I just wanted to thank you for calling in today. Really appreciate it. Great to hear about your story. Sorry that you've had to go away from your pulse crops for now, but hopefully by the time you go back, things will be a lot better, better seed treatments, maybe even a better variety or two, and it'll work out a lot better for you next time.
Very good. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks, Cliff. Appreciate it. All right, so once again, as we finish up our discussion on this root rot in pulse crops, drainage, super important. Using a good seed treatment and at least trying some of the ethoboxam and tigosolo, probably a good idea for you there. In addition, yeah, you can look at different varieties. Like everybody said here, it's all our callers today, pretty tough to find real good varieties. So you got to look at those first three things first. All right, well, we've got the Ag PhD mailbag where we answer your questions coming up next.
You don't settle. You're driven. You're committed. You're a farmer. And you are relentless. Mycogen Seeds is relentless too. We won't stop. We never settle. We don't back down. We work hard and we work smart to get to know you and your farm and make sure you get the right seed on the right acres. See for yourself at Mycogen.com or talk to your local Mycogen Seeds dealer and let us prove our relentless dedication to you.
Increase your yield potential by putting the power of nature to work. Quick Roots Microbial Seed Inoculant helps improve the availability and uptake of key nutrients like N, P, and K, which are critical for a healthy crop. Quick Roots technology is available for a variety of crops in an easy-to-apply formulation. Simply mix it into your dry planter box and your seeds will be covered. Learn more at MonsantoBioAg.com/QuickRoots.
Early and late blight go to great lengths to try to destroy your potato crops. They mutate and sneak up on you. So we at UPI went to great lengths to stop them with Manzate ProStick fungicide. Manzate ProStick is a multi-site fungicide that not only prevents blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which means with Manzate ProStick, your potatoes will be protected for a great length of time. To learn more, contact your UPI distributor or sales representative. Always read and follow label directions.
In today's market, growers deserve products that bring true, measurable value to their farm. My name is Wade Barnes, and I am the co-founder and CEO of Farmer's Edge. My passion has been to build a company that makes great products that creates value for farmers. When value is clear, decisions become easy. At Farmer's Edge, we believe the only way to understand value is to experience it yourself. I want to give every farmer the opportunity to experience the value of their data. Try our integrated data solution with no commitments till May 1st, 2018. Farmer's Edge will install cam plugs in every piece of equipment and weather stations on every farm. We'll give you access to our farm management platform, Farm Command. Experience the value of having accurate, field-centric data at your fingertips. I know we can make a difference on your farm. Your data is your asset. Own it and use it. Visit us at smartfarmers.com and sign up today. That's smartfarmers.com.
There's a powerful weapon to protect sunflowers and dry peas from unrelenting weeds, especially kochia, which can take away nutrients and drain your yield. With Spartan Elite Herbicide, your yields are protected with dominating pre-emergence control. It's the kind of protection where you know the battle is won before it ever begins. Learn more about Spartan Elite Herbicide at fmccrop.com. Always read and follow label directions.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
All right, our first comment comes from Dell today, and actually I've got a couple here talking about dicamba. So I'll first read you Dell's. He says, I'm disappointed that Ag PhD feels It needs to promote a product, dicamba beans, that is causing so many problems across the country and putting neighbor against neighbor, insurance companies, herbicide makers, co-ops, independent spray operators. None of these are claiming responsibility. Beans on my farm showed signs of drift August 1, got worse, still look bad, lost leaves, and look worse now here in early September. I believe I lost 50% of the yield potential. In the same field, the same variety, there's over a 12-inch height difference. And Dell, I'm going to stop you right there. You do not have what a lot of guys have around the country. What a lot of guys are seeing is volatility, where it's a tiny dose that ended up going across the field, and it moved after the farmer originally sprayed. So in other words, he landed it on the right spot, and then it moved. Or at least I believe, as somebody who's been around dicamba my whole life, that's what I believe I'm seeing in most of the cases. What you have is spray drift. I have spray drift this year from 2,4-D. A neighbor was spraying his pasture and drifted 2,4-D on my crop. This should not, this is solvable, okay? So this was whoever sprayed next to you, that's their fault, and you got to go talk to them, all right? So when in the same field, okay, now just so we're clear, in the same field, you've got a variety that's 12 inches shorter on one side and 12 inches taller on the other side where there's not as much drift, that's a spray drift issue, and you have to talk to the neighbor. And nothing has changed with this since farmers began spraying herbicide. And I don't care what you're using, if it's Banvil, 2,4-D, Roundup, Callisto. I mean, almost any product, you can have this issue. So I just want to make sure that we're clear here. This is not what everybody has. And whether the guy had dicamba beans or not, who knows what he would have sprayed. Apparently, whenever the day he chose to spray, it was windy, it was blowing toward you. So that's solvable, and the person should not have done that. Okay, I get that. But those things happen out here, and you got to go work with your neighbor on that. Here's the other thing. Okay, here, let me read this other one. This is from Riley down in Iowa, who says, Brian, I'm completely disappointed at the dicamba review in the latest newsletter. Let's see. He says, he sent me a link from some article that somebody wrote, and see how farmers were made experimental farms for Monsanto, neighbor relations soured, gardens were smoked, and yields according to our crop scout will be reduced. Well, again, we don't know what the yield's going to be, but here's where I want to step back for just a second, and let's take the emotion out of this for a second. Dicamba was originally discovered in 1942. That's 75 years ago. Velsicol labeled Banvil in 1967. That's 50 years ago. We've been using this stuff on the farm for 50 years. We've never seen anything like this. Okay, we've never seen where millions of acres are cupped. Never seen it. And I have personally recommended millions, if not even tens of millions of acres, be sprayed with dicamba over the years. Never seen anything like this. So I was not expecting this. And especially when we were told by both Monsanto and BSF, hey, these formulations are going to have less volatility. Okay, so we said, all right, fine. And EPA said, all right, if you're going to spray this stuff, you got to have great big droplets and you have to use drift retardant. So if we're using great big droplets and drift retardant, we're not going to have the drift issues. And by the way, going back to Dell's question, I would be willing to bet you a lot of money, Dell, that whoever sprayed next to you did not use the right nozzles and or did not use the drift retardant. Because when you've used the right nozzles and the drift retardant, we're not seeing drift. I mean, maybe 10 feet. But what we're seeing, in my opinion, is in most cases, not in your case, Dell, but to Riley's comment, what we're seeing, in my opinion, is we've made these droplets so big, we've extended the rain fast time, we've also extended the time it takes to get absorbed into the leaf. The product is sitting there longer, and especially when guys are spraying in the evening, humidity's high, that kind of thing, it's taking a long time for it to get absorbed into the plant. So what happens is you've got more time for it to volatilize. I believe that's what's happening. And I haven't read my newsletter article that I wrote here a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to guess that's exactly what I said in that newsletter article. And this is what's going on. So in terms of me giving the EPA or Monsanto a pass for what they did, look, yeah, I don't like it either. I also have spray drift. So don't get me wrong, I'm not happy about this, and we have to figure something out. And if we have another year like this, dicamba will be banned. And already in certain states, it's going to get banned after a certain date. So what we're most likely going to be talking about this coming winter is you better come up with an awfully good pre-program. And yeah, it's fine to use dicamba super early in the season, but you know, spraying it late, if you want to do that, you better make sure all your neighbors around you have Xtend. If all your neighbors have Liberty, you probably should switch to Liberty Beans and spray Liberty. Now, the one piece of good news that I will say is stacks are coming. Stacks are going to be here in not all that long. Already by this coming spring, I believe that there will be seed acres going in the ground. And by stack, I mean it's going to be Roundup together with Xtend, together with Liberty. So now you can use Xtend as your burn down, maybe real early post, and then you can come back with Liberty later on. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not happy with this whole deal either, guys. I mean, this is, as an agronomist, I just was... In my opinion, I feel like I was a little bit blindsided by this. I never expected we'd see anything like this. I am hoping that in most of the country, we see very little yield loss. And for all the fields I've looked at, and I've looked at hundreds of thousands of acres, there's going to be very little yield loss in any of those fields, if not even in some cases yield gain. Now, that's not to say that, yes, there were some fields that were absolutely damaged. But like in Dell's case, Dell, you don't have volatility. You have spray drift, okay? Spray drift, I don't mind as much. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I like spray drift or anything like that or I ever want it to happen. But with spray drift, now we can pinpoint where did this come from, okay? Just like for me and my 2,4-D drift that a guy drifted onto my field this year, the neighbor drifted onto me. I walked out one day and I'm like, what in the world's going on here? And you could very plainly see, okay, the beans are a lot shorter right next to the pasture, and they get taller as you go through the field. All right, well, now we know where that spray came from. The problem with volatility is we don't always know where it came from. If we know where it came from, then somebody's to blame there. If we don't know where it came from, that's where some of the problems come in. So I'm certainly hoping that the volatility issues will not be bad in terms of yield loss. All right. Let's go to our next question. This is from Steve. He says, I'm a long-term no-till farmer in southern Iowa and big fan of the show. Thank you, by the way, Steve. He says, regarding your pre-emerge program, what rate of prowl and authority to go with? Should I run with a third or a half pound of Metribuzin? And what about authority MTZ? Okay. So we were just talking about the dicamba issue. If you're going to plant Xtend beans this year, I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm going to say this all winter long at our workshops, we don't want to have to spray Xtend any more than we need to, Xtend to Max or Ingenia. All right. Obviously, the formulation still volatilize. Obviously, guys are still having problems getting them applied. Okay. So what we want to do is use them only as burn down or spray them early post. So that's going to mean you're going to need three pre's. You're going to need a better pre-program. So we love Metribuzin, and it just depends, Steve, on what you have in terms of soil. So what I'm getting at here is if you've got sandy soil, we don't want to use Metribuzin, very sandy soil. If you've got high pH soil, you're going to cut the rate of Metribuzin. So normally we're talking about a third of a pound of Metribuzin, but in high pH soil, so 7.4 and above, we're probably a sixth of a pound or less. If it's very sandy, we have to skip the Metribuzin, unfortunately, or go to like a 12th of a pound. Authority, Valor, we want to use as close to the full rate as we can. Prowl or Sonalan, we can use close to the full rate, but with Trifluralin, we usually will say pint and a half. That's a three-quarter rate because we worry about carryover. So that's typically what we're going to recommend. I would also say if you are not in no-till, so I realize, Steve, you're in no-till, but if you're not in no-till, Trifluralin is way cheaper. So if I can go Trifluralin, if I'm not in no-till, that's the way I'm going. Otherwise, yeah, prowl, and I'm going to run close to the full rate. But do that, and then it's going to mean you're going to need less, there's going to be a lot less need to spray that Xtend or anything else later in the season. All right, well, before we go, I just want to say thanks to our production staff, thanks to all who called in or wrote in with questions today, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.